Nehemiah chapter 6, let's begin reading in verse 15. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Elul in 52 days. And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of God. Moreover, in those days the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came unto them. For there were many in Judah sworn unto him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara, and his son Johanan had taken the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah. Also they reported his good deeds before me, and uttered my words to him, and Tobiah sent letters to put me in fear. Now, we're going to talk about finishing well in a world that won't quit. Nehemiah, I'm sure he knew when he left the palace that this wasn't going to be an easy task. But folks, sometimes you don't know what you're going to face until you get there. Sometimes you don't know the problems that are going to crop up until you get started with the work. And so you've got to be on your guard. You've got to be ready. And that's the way it is with a disciple of Christ. If you're going to be a disciple of Jesus, you've got to be willing to say no to yourself, yes to Him, take up your cross daily, and follow Him. You got to be willing to pay the cost of discipleship. And you won't know until you get started what that cost is going to be. So he's come to town, and he's finishing the job. You know, there are two dangerous places in any undertaking. If you're going to, let's say you're going to build your own house, there's two places that are dangerous. One is halfway, and the other is at the end. They've already faced that problem at the halfway point. Tribe of Judah talked about how tired the people were and how much rubbish there still was in the way, and how, you know, and it almost stopped the work. It did put a cessation on it for just a little bit, but they regathered and kept going. I understand what I'm trying to say here, because many times that's happened to me. I'm going to tell you something. When I went to the seminary, I was 28 years old. 5 years later, I was 125. It put that much stress on you. And when I got my associates, I'm thinking, man, I don't have to do this to be a preacher. I don't have to put myself through this anymore. This is hard. I want to quit. Thank God I had a wife sitting over here who said, no, you're not going to stop. Your goal is a master's degree, and you're going to keep going until you get it. There was 9 of us that started. Only 2 got a bachelor's, and only 1 of us got a master's. Thank God I had somebody pushing me. But I wanted to quit. There have been a whole lot of other times that I get to doing something and get about halfway through, and it's like, man, I don't want to do this anymore. This is harder than I thought it was going to be. I want to quit. So the marriages can be that way. You get a few years in and you think, man, this is rough. I want to quit. No, you made a promise. You made a covenant. You can't quit. I'm looking over here. Y'all can't quit. I don't care if you want to or not. You can't. When you come and you've been married 50 or 60 years, and somebody asks you, did you ever consider divorce? You're going to say, no, we never considered divorce, but we considered murder a time or two. But you're not going to quit. And then the other one is at the end. Why is that such an important point? Because you're finished. There's a slump that comes after you finish a project. You stop because you think, well, I'm through. I can sit down. You're like the rich young ruler there, you know, the farmer that that his crops brought plenty, and he tore down his barns and built bigger ones. And then he said, I'm done. I'm finished. I got enough goods laid up for many years. I'm just going to sit back and take my ease and eat, drink, and be merry. That night his soul was required of him. I've seen parents, and here's where I want to come to with this one. In my ministry, I have seen parents that would serve the Lord from the day they had their baby until their last child graduated high school and went out on their own. They were faithful to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. They taught Bible study. They worked with youth groups. They taught Sunday school. They taught an evening class. They were there on Wednesday night. They took kids to church camp. And the day their kid graduated high school, they said, we're done. And folks, they'll stop coming to church. They're done. I've done what I'm supposed to do. I'm finished. Every chicken farmer in here will know what I'm talking about. You watch that last truck drive out and you wave by. And you think, whew, I can rest a second or two. You can't rest much. You might rest a day. But if you don't get started on those chicken houses, they won't be ready for the next flock. So if you rest too much, you'll be behind. When I got out of the seminary, I could rest. I could take my foot off the gas pedal, and I did, and it almost killed me. The wrong thing to do. Don't ever stop learning. Don't ever stop, even when you finish this project, be like the Golden Gate Bridge. Years ago when I was in elementary, and I don't know what it takes now because everything's different, but back then they had to paint it by hand. It took 2 years to paint the Golden Gate Bridge. And the day they stopped painting on that side, they went back to the other side and started painting it all over again. Never-ending job. So don't ever come to a point where you say, well, I have arrived and I can just sit back and do nothing. In your Christian walk, you may accomplish some things. A church may go into a building program, and I'm going to tell you this, don't ever start using that building until the last nail is driven. If you go in there before all the trim work is up, guess what? People will quit and you'll never get the trim put all the way up. Don't stop until it's finished. Nehemiah finished what he started. Took 52 days. Let's get to that. Look at the completion of the work. So the wall was finished in 52 days in the month Elul. Now folks, Elul is basically our August and September. It takes about half of August and half of September. Now, we go by the Gregorian calendar. Our calendar works off of the sun. We go by revolutions around the sun. Our calendar is 365 days long, except on leap year. The Jewish calendar is a lunisolar calendar. They go by the moon. And all of their months either have 29 or 30 days. Their calendar has 360 days in it. This particular month was the last month of the year. It had 29 days in it. So right at the end of their month, of the last month, of that last month of the year, they finished. So now they can just sit back and do nothing because we got the wall finished. If they do that, they're in trouble. It was we might call it a supernatural accomplishment. You realize that Nehemiah wasn't a builder. Most of the people that worked for him were not constructionists. And yet the people had a mind to work. And so they accomplished something that looked humanly impossible to everybody else. It wasn't a result of perfect conditions, unlimited resources, or cooperative neighbors. It was a result of God's hand, God's timing, God's enabling grace, God's enabling strength. These people had a mind to work, and they did it for the honor and the glory of God. Nehemiah didn't finish. They didn't finish because they were talented. They finished because they were faithful. They could have stopped it halfway and it'd have been a disgrace, wouldn't it? But that's one of the things that he said when he got there, wasn't it? Y'all see the disgrace that we're in? Look at this stuff. This is a disgrace that these walls have been in ruins all these years and you've done nothing about it. So if they had stopped halfway, they didn't count the cost. So he had to keep them going and they finished it. Folks, God honors perseverance. God honors faithfulness. These people had been mocked, threatened, lied about, pressured, intimidated, undermined, betrayed. All of it pointed toward Nehemiah. Yet they kept building. Finishing, folks, is not about speed. Hello, young people. Finishing is not about speed. It's about steadfastness and faithfulness. There's a whole lot of people today, and it's not just young people. There's some older people this way. It's not about quality. It's about get her done as fast as I can. What good does it do to get it done if it's not done right? Persevere. Be steadfast. Be faithful. It's not always about speed. That's like building a mission work or a church. You don't do it overnight. Doesn't happen that way. You have to just persevere. You got to work through all the problems. You got to keep on going. I had a missionary friend one time out in Henderson, Nevada. They were getting ready to build a building. Somebody from some agency came out there and found a stupid turtle on the property. It slowed their progress down because they had to go get environmentalists to come in and sweep the whole property and either take these turtles away or find out if there was any more turtles like that on the property. And then to keep the turtles off the property, they had to build this big old wall around it. But you know what? It didn't deter them. They kept on going. There's a building out there today because they persevered. They kept on finishing. They were steadfast. Every church has a wall to build. We've seen that. Walls of discipleship, walls of holiness, walls of unity, gospel witness, spiritual culture. And the enemy's going to do everything they can to keep us from going forward. But we got to keep going. Look at the confusion of the enemy. In verse 16, what does it say? And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of God. That cast down in their own eyes, they were disheartened. They were so disappointed because they weren't able to stop the work. They weren't able to keep this from happening. And then the bad thing about it is they were forced to admit that God did it. We couldn't stop it. And God's the one that gets the credit. They couldn't deny it. It happened. They couldn't spin it. It happened. They couldn't explain it away. Only God was responsible. When God's people stay faithful, folks, the enemy eventually has to say, God did that. How did Jesus put this in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16? He said, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. These people here had no other choice but to say, evidently God did it. Because Nehemiah wasn't a builder. He used all kinds of people to do this, men and women. It didn't matter. If they had a mind to work, they were out there doing it. So it had to be God. It had to be God. Folks, we should strive for God to always get the honor and the glory. And we should live in front of people so that whenever there's our name comes up, they don't just think about us, they think about what does God do in that person's life? How has God blessed that person? God gets the glory when His people stay the course. The wall wasn't a monument to Nehemiah, folks. A little later on in this book, we're going to see a dedication of that wall to God. Not Nehemiah, but to God. It was a testimony to the power of God to work through His people, in His people, by His people. The greatest evangelism tool that a church has is not a program. It's not a program. It's the people finishing what God calls them to do. It's us being true disciples of Christ from the day we decide to be one until the last day of our life. No stopping anywhere. No giving in. No change of heart. No saying, well, this is too hard. We're going to pay the price. And we're going to finish the course that's set before us. We're going to press like Paul did toward the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. We're going to stretch out and run that race. The enemy's discouragement is tied to our obedience. Do you realize hell trembles when the church refuses to quit? What did Jesus say to Peter? He said, "Thou art Peter, but upon this rock I will build my church." And then he goes on to say, "And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." Folks, hell can't even stop a church that's going forward. They can throw obstacles in the way. They can do everything just like these folks did to try to stop Nehemiah and that group of people. But if God's in it, folks, if God be for us, the Bible says, who can be against us? But we've got to make sure that it's of God. So the enemy is cast down when God's people keep building. But is he through? I said last week that it was the last one, but it's not. It's the last open one until we get on over a little farther. We have some subversion going on. Verses 17 through 19. "Moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah." Let me stop there. Folks, Tobiah is a card-carrying enemy of the work of God at Jerusalem. They are bed partners with the enemy. Let's just keep going. And the letters of Tobiah came unto them. They just didn't write to him. He's writing back to them. Do you realize it takes two people to carry on a conversation? We don't have to yield and give in to people like that. But let me just stop and say this. I can just see right now, like our country, we have so many weak-kneed, mealy-mouthed people in this country. Oh, you can't talk about this because that might hurt somebody's feelings. You might be viewed as racist if you say that. You might be viewed as a homophobe if you say that. See what I'm saying? You can't say anything to anybody because they're wearing their feelings out on their sleeve. How dare you say that? Well, is it the truth? Yeah, but how dare you say it? I can just see these people here saying, "Oh, Nehemiah has just mistreated poor old Tobiah so bad. Tobiah's a good guy. He's married into us. He's the son-in-law. His son is married, one of our daughters. Oh, poor old Tobiah. Nehemiah's just mistreating him so bad. He's just been so rough on him. So we got to smooth Tobiah's feathers a little bit." Makes you want to dip snuff when you think about it that way, don't it? Can I tell you this? I catch the funny side of this. Do you see who it is again? It's the tribe of Judah that's doing this. The two times when they tried to get it to go sour, it's been Judah on the inside. Back in chapter 4, verses 10 through 12, turn back over there if you want to, but it says, "And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we're not able to build the wall." They're whining again. "And our adversary said, they shall not know neither see till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease." Let me tell you something. They sure not living up to their name as the lion tribe, are they? Giving in. And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places which ye shall return unto us, shall they be upon you. Judah's back at it again. Poor old Tobiah. They were sending letters to him and praising Tobiah to Nehemiah. They were reporting Nehemiah's words back to Tobiah. They were political and not spiritual. They were connected but not consecrated. They were impressed with Tobiah, not invested in the work. They should have been just as angry at Tobiah as they were at Sanballat and Geshem and everybody else. But no, we've got a soft spot for him because he married into the family. Let me just say this. I love my family. But right is right and wrong is wrong. If a family member is right, praise God. If a family member is wrong, too bad. I don't have to like it. I don't have to be a part of it. I don't have to, I don't have to go fishing with that family member. Because right's right and wrong's wrong. But here they're just willing to compromise because Tobiah has become part of, and he's a married into it part. I mean, he's not even blood related, he's married into it. Their compromise created some internal pressure. And folks, the destruction often comes from the inside instead of the outside. Nehemiah had survived external threats and military intimidation, false prophets, slander, manipulation, but now he faces internal disloyalty. You know, you expect things. Let me just tell you this. Did you realize that you cannot be betrayed by your enemies? Why do I say that? Because you expect it from your enemies. You are betrayed by your friends and your family. You don't expect them to do that to you. You don't expect them to be a problem. They're supposed to love you. They're supposed to be on your side. So you can be betrayed by your friends and your family, but you expect it from your enemies. As a pastor, that's happened to me. I have been betrayed in the past. Not, I'm going to say this again. Not from anyone in this congregation. Not from anyone in this church have I been betrayed. But in the past years before I got here, I felt betrayal. And that's sad. It hurts because you didn't expect it out of that person. So now he faces internal disloyalty. So the greatest danger to any church is not the outside, it's the inside. Tobiah kept sending letters to put me in fear, he says. Even after the wall was finished, the enemy didn't quit. He just changed tactics. The devil doesn't stop attacking you just because the work is finished. That's why you can't let your guard down. That's why you can't just say, I'm going to sit back and do nothing, because it won't be long till you won't do anything after that either. He attacks because you are finished. He wants you to rest and not do anything else. If you don't get anything else out of this, get this. Finishing well in a world that won't quit is what we need to do. Nehemiah shows us three truths, and we've already discussed some of them. We'll go over them again. That every believer in every church must embrace. Number one, finishing a work does not end the warfare. You better stay on your guard. Don't get at ease in Zion. Don't put your guard down, because Satan will sneak up behind you and sucker punch you. The wall is done, but the battle continues. Victory today does not guarantee peace tomorrow. Spiritual momentum must be guarded. If you slow down too much, the world will catch up to you. Not everyone who is among God's people is aligned with God's purpose. Man, we live in a great day, but we also live in a scary day. We live in a day when you have access to more preachers than you ever had access to in your life. You can go on Facebook, you can go on YouTube, you can go on television, you can go on the radio, and you can listen to anybody in the world. We were talking about out front. My buddy Jack sent me a deal this morning. I hadn't had time to look at it, but he said, the world looks bleak because now we have AI pastors that can lead people to follow the beast. AI pastors. There are people out there that would rather believe what comes out of Facebook than what comes right straight out of the pulpit in some church. The nobles, folks, were impressed with Tobiah. They were connected to Tobiah. They were loyal to Tobiah. They were influenced to Tobiah. But they were blind to the danger. There are some people in the churches that are saved, but they're not surrendered. They're present, but they're not persuaded. They're here, but they're not listening. They're hearing, but they're not listening. You see, it's impossible for you to sit here and not actually hear what I'm saying. But are you listening to it? If you're listening to it, you're paying attention. You're trying to understand. You're trying to grasp it. There's a whole lot of people that are just not listening. Some are involved, but they're not invested. We've got to be aware of that danger. Third, God's work succeeds when God's people stay faithful. We've already seen that. Nehemiah didn't let fear, didn't let flattery, pressure, betrayal distract him. He stayed prayerful. He stayed faithful. God finished the work. And we need to be the same way. Folks, we need to understand that sometimes we may finish a task. We may come to a point where we have accomplished what we set out to accomplish. Don't sit down and take your ease in Zion. Don't sit back and rest on your laurels. Don't look back and say, well, I've done all I need to do. I'm going to tell you, there'll come a point where a man will no longer be able, physically or maybe mentally, able to pastor a church. There'll come a point where you may not be physically able to run with the teenagers anymore. You may not be able. There was a time when I played football with them and I played volleyball with them. I'm sorry, young people. I'm too old and fat for that. All it would do is get me hurt. I can watch you and I can root you on and I can be there for you whenever the cookies crumble, but I can tell you this, I can't do what I used to could do because I'm too old for it. So we may get too old to do some of the things that we used to, but never ever, if you're in your right mind, you continue to read and study and pray. You continue to tell people about Jesus. You may not can do what you used to do, but you can still do something. As long as God gives you breath, you keep going. Don't you ever come to a place where you say, I have arrived and I can quit and I don't have to do anything else. Because there's no place like that. There's no place to stop in the work of the Lord. You've got to keep going.